Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
UN vote on rights abuses keeps pressure on North Korea, and Ukraine's parliament drops non-aligned status. I'm Bob Doty, reporting from Washington. North Korea has denounced a UN Security Council vote on Monday to address human rights abuses in the country. The vote increases international pressure on North Korea's leaders. VOA's Brian Padden reports from Seoul that, given the angry reaction so far from Pyongyang, it could also escalate the possibility of confrontation.
The vote to put North Korean human rights violations on the UN Security Council's agenda was passed despite objections from China and Russia. An angry North Korea refused to recognize the meeting where U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Samantha Power was among those who spoke out against the government's alleged crimes against humanity.
Today we have broken the Council's silence. We have begun to shine a light, and what it has revealed is terrifying.
This was the first time North Korea's human rights situation had been debated by the UN Security Council. Brian Padden, VOA News, Seoul.
Ukraine took a further step toward seeking NATO membership Tuesday when the country's parliament overwhelmingly passed a law abolishing Kiev's neutral non-aligned status. Lawmakers voted 303-8 to drop the non-aligned status. Addressing a parliament session, Ukrainian Foreign Minister Pavlo Klimkin said the step moves the country closer to NATO and opens new mechanisms and new forms of realization of Ukraine's goals of effective internal policy. Speaking in support of revoking the non-aligned status, another member of parliament said that Ukraine's place is in Europe, Ukraine's place is in NATO. This is VOA News. The U.S. economy grew at the fastest rate in 11 years during July, August, and September, expanding by 5%, which is much faster than first thought. Tuesday's report from the Commerce Department showed a sharp increase in the third quarter gross domestic product, which is the sum of all the goods and services produced in a nation. It is the broadest measure of economic health. Experts routinely revise GDP estimates as more complete data become available. In this case, stronger consumer spending and business investment helped bolster growth. A human rights group says Islamic State militants are using rape as a weapon against ethnic Yazidi women seized from northern Iraq in what amounts to war crimes and crimes against humanity. Amnesty International issued a report Tuesday detailing accounts from interviews with 42 women and girls who managed to escape the militants and several others who are still being held. It describes both physical and psychological torture, including rape and other sexual violence. Donatella Rovera, the senior crisis response advisor for Amnesty, described the physical and psychological toll as catastrophic. Top Afghan and U.S. generals have visited Pakistan amid heightened security concerns following last week's Taliban-led school massacre in Peshawar. Pakistan's Army Chief General Rahil Sharif addressed anti-terrorism efforts with Afghan General Shahir Mohammad Karimi and U.S. General John Campbell, commander of U.S. and NATO forces in Afghanistan. A statement by the International Security Force, or rather the Assistance Force, said Tuesday's meeting in Islamabad focused on military coordination on both sides of the border. The rest of frontier between Afghanistan and Pakistan is seen as a haven for several militant groups, including the Taliban. The international police agency Interpol says it has arrested an alleged ivory trafficker who has been on the run for months. The head of Interpol, Vitalis Okumu, said Tuesday that officers apprehended Faisal Ali at a rental home in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. Ali, a Kenyan national, was on the Interpol most wanted list as a trafficker of ivory, which is taken from poached elephants. He faces charges in Kenya of dealing and possession of elephant tusks. And a press freedom group says at least 60 journalists have been killed this year while doing their job, with members of the international press making up a particularly high percentage of the dead. The New York-based Committee to Protect Journalists issued its annual report Tuesday, documenting journalist deaths in 21 countries in 2014. I'm Bob Doty in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Ambassador George Weah, in some past, being considered by many of his political allies a formidable candidate when it comes to the politics, the dynamics of politics in Liberia. And his election as senator has sent a clear message to people that may have overlooked him that his political sojourn was totally dead.
That's analyst Vandelark Patrick's commenting on Liberia's Senate elections. Details coming up.
Also in the news, the UN Refugee Agency says it is looking for help to relocate to safety several hundred Muslims in Central African Republic who are under threat from the anti-Balaka militias. And a bomb exploded late yesterday in northern Nigeria, killing six.
We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from Cameroon, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, Liberian football legend George Weah has commanding lead over the son of President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf in the race for the Senate seat representing the largest county and the seat of the nation's capital, Monrovia. The Elections Commission chair said results counted thus far from Saturday's vote gave Africa's 1995 Player of the Year approximately 80% of the vote. Robert Sirleaf, who previously served as president of the National Oil Company of Liberia, has only 11%. There were 11 candidates in a vote often postponed by the crisis of the Ebola virus disease.
Vandelark Patricks is the National Director of Campaigners for Change, a Monrovia-based organization he founded that is devoted to educating young people through civic educational programs. He spoke with me about the significance of George Weah's lead in the Senate poll, which has 11 candidates running, and what challenges lie ahead as a senator for Montserrado County.
Ambassador George Weah, in some past, being considered by many of his political allies a formidable candidate when it comes to the politics, the dynamics of politics in Liberia. And his election as senator has sent a clear message to people that may have overlooked him that his political sojourn was totally dead. As you may recall, he lost the election in 2005. He also lost the election in 2011. So many thought that his decline in a political journey was a total demise. But his resurrection with an overwhelming victory, I think that alone puts the party, his political party, the CDC, in a better position in preparation for the 2017 presidential election, an election that he is also considering to contest as president. In Montserrado County, that has been considered as the stronghold of the CDC, the political party of Ambassador George Weah, I think his overwhelming victory, especially where the young people see him as a beacon of hope, where he won in nearly all the polling centers, I think it demonstrates to everybody that he remains a formidable force within the body politics of Liberia, especially in Montserrado County. But the defeat of Mr. Robert Sirleaf, the son of the president, would clearly tell the world that Madam Sirleaf has lost legitimacy within the presidency and even in the seat of the government, where her son was massively defeated by an opposition political party.
Now, turnout looks like it's been pretty low so far with 27.9%. So what does this turnout mean, that people are still maybe being affected by the Ebola epidemic, or is it just a lack of interest?
Many of the voters feel that those of their senators that they elected, they are not being seeking their interest. As you may be aware, members of the national legislature, the 53 members of the national legislature, they were in the past in the business of signing concessions. You are quite aware that over 56 concessions were signed And out of those 58 concessions that were signed, only two were in the interest of Liberia, meaning they followed the due process of law. The rest violated the laws of Liberia. A vast majority of the people are still living an impoverished life. They live on less than 75 cents a day. Some of them have no opportunity to go to school. Unemployment is high. Officials of government are being appointed to work. So most of these people that have been broken down by the policies that have been crafted by the first branch of government, members of the national legislature, they were very much reluctant. Some of them exercised that as a protest. We interacted with some of them. They said their refusal not to vote was a sign of protest. On the other hand, other people said that the Ebola has affected the landscape of our country, and as such, to go to election, we have demonstrated to the world that Nigerians are not serious in the fight against Ebola. And for that reason, they decided not to show up, to demonstrate to the world that they are in sympathy with those that lost their lives as a result of the Ebola.
If George Weah is to win the Senate race, what do you think he will be able to do in terms of fighting the Ebola epidemic there?
We will want to encourage Ambassador Weah that if he should win these elections, he should consider himself as the senator for the people of Muscle Radio and not as the senator of his political party. Muscle Radio country, as a country, must have an office where people will make suggestions to him, making to understand that the Ebola is still in our country. He should be more robust. He must create a platform where ideas will come from different sections of the country, not necessarily people from his political party. Secondly, as a civil rights organization, we will want to challenge George Weah to erase that notion, to now begin to work with people, especially people from Muscle Radio County, where he's now representing, or he will be representing as a senator, to work together collectively, even after Ebola.
That was Vandalark Patrick's National Director of Campaigners for Change. He spoke with me from Monrovia, Liberia.
A bomb exploded late yesterday in northern Nigeria, killing six and raising the number of bombing victims on Monday to 26. More than 70 others were injured in the two attacks. The bombing of a market in Bauchi State engulfed shoppers in flames that continued to burn for hours and endangered the lives of firefighters. The Bauchi attack followed a bombing in Gombe, where Red Cross officials said holiday travelers were among the 20 whose bodies were burned beyond recognition. The two bombings and an attack by gunmen in pickup trucks in Gaydan Town in Yobe State on Sunday night are all blamed on Boko Haram fighters.
In Gaydan, the attackers freed inmates from a local prison, threw bombs that destroyed the police station and government buildings, and destroyed dozens of vehicles used for long-distance freight hauling. Factions of the Boko Haram sect that have declared a caliphate in parts of three northern states are believed responsible for more than 2,000 deaths in 5 years.
Nigerian militant sect Boko Haram has intensified its five-year insurgency and targeted civilians in large numbers, seizing territory in the northeast in 2014. The kidnapping of nearly 300 schoolgirls in Chibok in April sparked global outrage, but failed to become the turning point against the sect that Nigeria's president said it would be. VOA's Ann Look reports the picture at year's end is one of devastation and uncertainty.
Boko Haram released a video this week of gunmen massacring dozens of men identified only as, quote, prisoners and infidels. The floor of a school dormitory is filled with bodies. Shooters walk over them to finish off those still breathing. The video marks a gruesome end to the sect's bloodiest year to date. Rights groups say militant Islamist sect Boko Haram killed more than 2,000 people in the first half of 2014 alone. That's almost as many as were killed in the previous 4 years of the insurgency combined. In the northeast, Nigerians mourn the dead and the disappeared. The 219 Chibok schoolgirls are still missing, Boko Haram grabbed the girls from their dormitories in April. It woke the world up to terror in northeastern Nigeria. The Twitter hashtag #BringBackOurGirls trended globally. The movement still holds daily rallies in Nigeria. Meanwhile, insurgents seized towns and villages in the northeast. They burned, looted, and slaughtered. They conscripted young men and kept right on kidnapping women and girls for use as wives and servants. At year's end, fighting had displaced more than 1 million Nigerians. In August, Boko Haram leader Abubakar Shekau declared a caliphate, a designation analysts say is more aspirational than actual. Some analysts say the military seems to be, quote, gaining, but it's hard to measure. The military retakes some towns, even as Boko Haram threatens others. It's a, quote, war of attrition, according to Yola-based professor Kiari Mohammed, who studies the insurgency.
Even if the military were able to push them out of all the urban centers, it is still going to be difficult for them to secure lives and property in the several villages around those. So this is going to be a major problem. It's like they will have to patrol and they will have to physically be present in every inch of the territory. So that, you know, that's going to be fairly difficult.
Boko Haram continued bombing in 2014 as well. There were three major suicide attacks in the month of November alone. One was at a boys' school in Potiskum. At least 47 students there were killed. Another was at a mosque in Kano. At least 120 people were killed there, and twice as many more were wounded. And another attack at a market in the Borno State capital, Maiduguri, killed at least 45 people. Borno State Governor Kashim Shettima had this reaction.
What these lunatics are doing is completely at variance with the teachings of Islam. They are plain, raving lunatics. And I believe the hottest place in hell will be reserved for these madmen.
The emir of Kano, Sanusi Lamido Sanusi, called on citizens to arm themselves. We should not wait for soldiers to come, he said. Before they come, the carnage will have been done. Some of them, he said, drop their guns and flee. Nigeria's military showed signs of strain in 2014. In all, 66 soldiers were sentenced to death for mutiny in the northeast. Soldiers complained they were sent into battle without adequate equipment. Cameroon went on the offensive amid Boko Haram attacks on its side of the border. Nigeria met several times with its neighbors to try to put together a coordinated response.
This is the year where Boko Haram became the real major threat in the region.
That's CEO of the Berlin-based security firm Mossecon, Yan Saint-Pierre, who monitors Boko Haram.
They've evolved strategically. They've shown an inclination for ruthlessness that was unprecedented for them. It's not just about kidnapping and murders or statistics, if you want to put it that way. What they've demonstrated, this is really, they've become a full-fledged criminal organization with a good financial structure, with a good tactical structure, and this is the most dangerous part.
Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan is trying to get reelected in February. The war grinding on in the northeast sets an ominous stage for that vote. Anne Luck, VOA News, Dakar.
7 minutes past the hour. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has proposed that the international community create a more effective early warning system for the next major health crisis. Returning to New York from visiting sites in several West African countries devastated by the Ebola epidemic, Ban said the world must learn lessons from this nine-month crisis. Since March, more than 19,000 West Africans have been infected and more than 7,000 have died. Despite millions of dollars spent by donors in three countries whose health systems have been crippled by the disease.
In his position as UN Secretary General, Ban Ki-moon said he will raise the issue of a new early warning system among the 193 member states. Ban said his visit to Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea proves that where people show no symptoms, others should show no fear. He said transmissions of the virus are slowing, but he said Ebola remains an emergency in West Africa.
The UN Refugee Agency says it is urgently looking for help to relocate to safety several hundred Muslims from the Piul ethnic group in Central African Republic who are under threat from the anti-Balaka militias. Lisa Schlein has this report.
The UNHCR says 474 Muslims from the Piul ethnic minority have been trapped for months in the town of Yaloke, living in deplorable conditions. It says the besieged group is living in a state of fear, confined to an overcrowded site for internally displaced people. The assessment team found severe malnourishment, malaria, and tuberculosis. It says 42 people from the group that fled their homes in the Lobe Prefecture in April have since died. UNHCR spokesman Adrian Edwards tells VOA the situation needs quick action.
We don't think it's tenable anymore, and for this reason, we think it's important that people are brought to safer places. This is an urgent situation. It's been going on for months. It's getting worse by the day. It needs action quickly to deal with it.
In February, Piul minorities were attacked by mainly Christian anti-Balaka militias in several towns in Lobe Prefecture to the west of Bangui. The UNHCR reports about 700 people fled their homes, hoping to find passage to Cameroon or Chad, but this did not happen. Edward says the Muslims spent several months on the run, hiding in the bush at night. He says many lost family members and friends.
April saw more than 50 men killed in attacks by anti-Balakas, who also took around 7,000 head of cattle, which has major livelihood and economic implications for those affected. Many people found sanctuary further north in Yaloke and were hoping to leave the country. Yaloke was once a thriving town, home to 10,000 Muslims. Today, the displaced Piul are the only Muslims still there.
Edwards says international forces posted in the region play a role in protecting people and have prevented atrocities. But he says the Muslims in Yaloke still receive many threats and are verbally and physically abused by the anti-Balaka. The assessment team that visited the region says more than 90% of the people are desperate to leave for Cameroon or Chad. It says they pleaded for vehicles and security to help them to reach their destination safely. Reprisal attacks between anti-Balaka and the mostly Muslim Seleka rebels have continued since last year in the Central African Republic. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Normally, Christmas is the time to be merry, but not so for many cash-strapped Zimbabweans who continue to reel under the country's economic crisis. With just 2 days before Christmas, many Zimbabweans say they cannot afford to celebrate as they used to because money is hard to come by. Erwin Chifera has more details from Harare.
Many of those interviewed ahead of the most important day on the Christian calendar said, with many companies closing and those still operating struggling to pay their workers for months, Christmas and New Year holidays have lost their appeal as things go from bad to worse for the poor ordinary person on the street. To make matters worse, the government, the largest employer in the country, is failing to pay its workers and has announced that most of its workers will get their bonuses early next year. Some civil servants are still to get their December salaries. Former Prime Minister and opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai says most Zimbabweans are desperately poor, adding they did not have the means to relax and celebrate with their families and friends.
I don't know whether to say Merry Christmas, because I think that the character of any year is measured by the state of the people as we go towards the end of the year. The carnival atmosphere normally associated with this season is no more. We have become a nation of vendors and beggars. Everyone is trying to sell something to somebody.
Harare resident Wakefield Mulilo concurs with Changirai. He says many people have no money to spend on Christmas and New Year holidays. While in the past he would travel to his rural home to be with his parents, Mulilo says he is unable to do so this year.
This Christmas and New Year is going to be a very, very dull Christmas because basically people don't have money to spend.
An employee who declined to be named at SageMed, one of the companies which has gone for months without paying its workers, told Studio 7 there was no way he could have a decent Christmas without money. He said after months without pay, the company has given employees $70 each for the holidays, an amount he said is too meager to meet his family's demands for the holidays ahead of the January school fees demands and other things. Godfrey Toamutimba is the secretary of the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions Young Workers Council. He tells Studio 7 workers are caught between a hard place and a rock and cannot afford to pay for any festivities. He says Christmas once again, as it has been in the past decade or so, would just be like any other day for many workers and ordinary Zimbabweans.
We don't have a Christmas to talk about. There's no Christmas in Zimbabwe. How can we have a Christmas when people are not employed, when people do not have money?
Former Zimbabwe National Students Union President Clever Bere says 2014 was a very bad year and he expects the Christmas and New Year holidays to be very dull as people have no buying power.
The reality is companies are closing, many people are losing jobs, the buying power is getting eroded every day, companies are failing to pay salaries.
He said the situation had been worsened by the ZANU-PF government's failure to create 2 million jobs as promised in the 2013 elections, as well as its failure to resuscitate industry. South African-based Rick Mukonza, who is a public management lecturer at the Tshwane University of Technology and is in the country for the Christmas and New Year holidays, says though Zimbabweans would have a low-key Christmas and New Year holiday, he believes their problems would soon be over as they have suffered for too long.
For that reason, we'll just do the ordinary that any ordinary Zimbabwean would expect.
Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
A press freedom group says at least 60 journalists have been killed this year while doing their job, with members of the international press making up a particularly high percentage of the dead. The New York-based Committee to Protect Journalists issued its annual report today, documenting journalist deaths in 21 countries in 2014. It says local journalists continue to be the most targeted, but that 23% of those killed were international journalists. By comparison, the local press makes up to 90% of the CPJ's database of journalist deaths dating back to 1992.
The report attributes the uptick to the increasingly volatile nature of conflict zones in which Westerners are often targeted. Syria was by far the most dangerous country for journalists, with 17 deaths this year. Five journalists were killed in both Iraq and Ukraine, while four deaths happened in Somalia and during the war between Israel and Palestinian militants. This is African News Tonight with Kim Lewis. I'm Yehiyi Suhib in Washington. It's 28 minutes past the hour on The Voice of America.
Hello. I'm Douglas Simpoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
This is a public service announcement from VOA Africa. U.S. President Barack Obama addressing the Ebola crisis.
Hello. I want to take a few moments to speak directly to you, the people of West Africa. On behalf of the American people, I want you to know that our prayers are with those of you who have lost loved ones during this terrible outbreak of Ebola. Along with our partners around the world, the United States is working with your governments to help stop this disease. Stopping this disease won't be easy, but we know how to do it. Together, we can treat those who are sick with respect and dignity. We can save lives, and our countries can work together to improve public health so this kind of outbreak doesn't happen again. In this urgent work, and in building a stronger and more prosperous Africa, you'll continue to have a partner in me and in the United States of America.
This was a public service announcement from VOA Africa.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. The UN Refugee Agency says it is looking for help to relocate to safety several hundred Muslims in Central African Republic who are under threat from anti-Balaka militias. And a bomb exploded late yesterday in northern Nigeria, killing six people. Coming up, we'll have music from Cameroon. And in our feature segment, the NGO Light for the World, working to eradicate trachoma in Ethiopia. I'm Kim Lewis with Yehias Wuhib, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. Of course, it's time now for the Sunny Side of Sports with Sunny Young. And happy Tuesday, Sunny.
Happy Tuesday to you, Kim.
Well, Sunny, I understand you're tipping off with an explosive basketball performance.
Kim, let's tip off with pro basketball and an explosive performance by Houston Rockets star James Harden. Harden poured in a season-high 44 points Monday night to lead the Rockets to an easy 110-95 victory over the visiting Portland Trailblazers. The big win snapped a two-game losing streak by the Rockets and improved their record on the season to 20 wins and 7 losses. Harden was magnificent. The bearded all-star guard combined exciting drives to the basket with accurate long-range shots. Harden scored 31 points in the first half to help the Rockets take a 20-point halftime lead. The Blazers didn't threaten after that, and Harden went to the bench for good with about 4 minutes left in the game. Now, James Harden is leading the NBA in scoring, averaging 27 points a game, and he's definitely boosted his average in December. This was his NBA-leading third 40-point game this season, with all of them coming this month. After his scoring outburst against the Blazers, Harden shifted the credit to his teammates.
My teammates did a great job coming out with some energy and effort. A big lift from Corey Brewer off the bench. We played extremely hard, and that's what we have to bring every night in order to be a great team. Yeah, just try to be in attack mode, you know, making the right plays, defensively being active, and, all of us were aggressive on defense, and that's how we got the big lead.
That's James Harden of the Houston Rockets, who is leading the NBA in scoring right now. From Houston, let's go west across the big U.S. state of Texas to San Antonio. That's where the defending NBA champion San Antonio Spurs ended a four-game losing streak with a 125-118 victory over the Los Angeles Clippers. French star Tony Parker scored 26 points for the Spurs. Tony returned to the court after missing 5 games with a hamstring injury. With the win, San Antonio improved its record to 18 victories and 11 defeats. The Clippers, meanwhile, now have a record of 19 wins and 9 losses. Just ahead in a Sunny Side of Sports highlight for 2014, we'll look back to June when the San Antonio Spurs won their 5th National Basketball Association title.
They're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
In National Basketball Association news, the San Antonio Spurs are the league champions for 2014. The Spurs dethroned the Miami Heat in resounding fashion, beating the Heat 104-87. To win the NBA Finals 4-1. Plain and simple, VOA basketball fans, the Spurs dominated this championship series. All four of their victories were by at least 15 points. They played a beautiful brand of unselfish basketball, working the ball around the court and shredding Miami's defense throughout the series. San Antonio's small forward, Kawhi Leonard, who more than held his own against Miami superstar LeBron James, was named the NBA Finals Most Valuable Player.
It just feels like a dream to me. But this is my second finals appearance in my third year. I've been just progressing each year, and the team has also. Losing in the semifinals my first year, and then losing the championship my second year, and then now winning in my third year, it just makes you believe in your craft and your hard work.
Kawhi Leonard, who has been described as the future of San Antonio's franchise, is the youngest NBA Finals Most Valuable Player since his teammate Tim Duncan in 1999. That was the first of five NBA titles for the now 38-year-old Duncan, who has been the cornerstone of the Spurs during their great run of success the past 15 years. Here's how Tim Duncan described his latest trophy.
Very special. It was already a special day, but to do it at home, to do it with my kids and my family and my friends here, made it so much more special. Just a great experience, and a great experience for them.
Meanwhile, the 2014 NBA Finals was not a great experience for LeBron James, who was bidding for a third straight NBA title.
I mean, mixed emotions. Started off very well as a team. You know, we had a great first quarter. But from that point on, you know, they were the better team. And, that's why they're the champions in 2014.
Once again, the NBA champions in 2014 are the San Antonio Spurs. The Spurs also won the NBA title in 1999, 2003, 2005, and 2007. This latest championship was sweet revenge for San Antonio, which lost a hard-fought seven-game series to Miami in the 2013 NBA Finals. Tim Duncan and some of the other Spurs players felt like they let that series slip away from them, especially in Game 6, where they blew a lead late in the game.
This is Dikembe Mutombo. I am from Africa. Malaria kills thousands of children every day. Don't let your child be one of them. Make sure they sleep under a treated mosquito net. Beating malaria is like winning at basketball. You need to get to the net.
Thanks to Kembe, the Congolese giant retired in 2009 after 18 seasons in the NBA. Big Dikembe now enjoys NBA action as a fan. Earlier this month, he met British Royals Prince William and his wife Kate on the sidelines of a game between the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Brooklyn Nets in New York City. Our Daybreak Africa sportsman Mark Ouma joins us now with more sports news. And Mark kicks off with a story about the Spanish coach of Equatorial Guinea's national football team.
Coach Androni Goikoetxea remains in charge of the Equatorial Guinea football team as they prepare for the 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations. The Equatorial Guinea Football Federation President Dominic Ejang told the media in Malabo. He dispelled speculation that either Nigerian Stephen Keshi or former Ghanaian coach Milovan Rajevac will take charge of the team for the Nations Cup as Goikoetxea's contract expires at the end of this month. Ejang clarified that it is too late to contract a new coach and that the current coach will continue to serve until the end of the Nations Cup to be staged in Equatorial Guinea from the 17th of January. The Equatorial Guinea team is currently in a training camp in Lisbon, Portugal, preparing for the Nations Cup. In women's football, African champions Nigeria Super Falcons are the most improved African women's team, while South Africa's Banyana Banyana have slipped by the widest margin, according to the latest FIFA rankings released in Zurich, Switzerland. Nigeria ranked 32nd, Ghana are 50th, Cameroon 52nd, Equatorial Guinea 54th, South Africa 60th, Ivory Coast 65th, Algeria is 77th and are immediately followed by Morocco, then Tunisia, while Egypt are 87th. Turning to athletics, Alex Kibet and Abraham Kapsis Kipyatich secured a 1-2 Kenyan triumph in the men's race at the IAAF cross-country permit meet in Brussels, Belgium, while 19-year-old newfound Sheila Chepngetich Keter triumphed over the British Commonwealth Games 1500-meter champion Faith Kipyegon in a Kenyan 1-2 victory in the women's race. I'm Mark Omen, Johannesburg, South Africa.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com. VOA!
I encourage our VOA listeners with internet access to check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. The address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. Once again, that address, facebook.com/VOA Sunny. You'll see photos and videos, and you can post your comments. So check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page.
Voice of America!
And if you check out my Facebook page today, Tuesday, you'll see a photo of Houston Rockets star James Harden, who, as I mentioned earlier, is the leading scorer in the National Basketball Association. Harden is shown shooting over Portland's Allen Crabbe and Houston's victory Monday night. If you scroll down my Facebook page, you'll also see a few Christmas cards I've received from our loyal Voice of America listeners. Let me give three shout-outs for three of those card senders. Magnus Chisholm Onwadiwe, the humble apostle of the Sunny Side of Sports, sent me my first Christmas card from Owerri, Nigeria. The Sunny Side of Sports is truly an international show. I also received a Christmas card from Grant Skinner in London, England. And let's give one more shout-out for Richard Chen, who sent me holiday greetings from Trinidad and Tobago. Finally, this like father, like son basketball tidbit. Cleveland Cavaliers star LeBron James has shared a short video on social media that shows off his 10-year-old son's basketball skills. LeBron Jr. can be seen tearing up the opposing defense, passing the ball and scoring in a style very reminiscent of his father. And Kim, I know they had that saying, the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. Maybe a better saying, the basketball doesn't fall too far from the tree.
Exactly. I think he's on his way to being a big pro basketball player.
Good genes in the LeBron James family. I'm VOA Sonny Young, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports. Back to Yahias Wuhib and Kim Lewis.
Okay, thank you, Sonny. And listen to the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1631 UTC and 1831 UTC. And on Fridays, Sonny has an expanded half-hour edition of the Sunny Side of Sports at 1730 hours UTC right here on the Voice of America.
Coming up, the NGO Light of the World working to eradicate the eye disease trachoma in Ethiopia. And next, water from unprotected sources like rivers and wells, putting Malawians at risk of contracting waterborne diseases. But first, some music. Here is Frida of Cameroon with Celebrate Your Life.
Oh,
Cameroon's Frida with Celebrate Your Life.
An army of women in Ethiopia has been recruited to teach friends and neighbors how to prevent trachoma. It's an eye disease that's preventable but still very common in many parts of Ethiopia. The Confederation of National Development NGOs, Light for the World, has worked for a long time to reduce trachoma in the country. A major step in preventing it is to teach others the cause and how to prevent it. I visited the home of one woman who was part of the army, and she works to educate on preventing trachoma. Light for the World and its partners train at the local level through such initiatives as Ethiopia's Army of Women. Mebert Kasua is a 20-year-old wife, mother of two small children, and a leader in her community of Antarctica's Health Development Army, an army of women fighting diseases with medicine and knowledge. Medbert lives in the family compound with her mother-in-law, who by family tradition is in charge of the entire family. Mebert is a shy young mother whose words spoken in her native Tigrinya are carefully chosen. A Light for the World program officer who helps train the army of women, Kalkadan Ketsela, translated her description of the day's work as a member of the family and a soldier in the Health Development Army.
Early in the morning, after she wake up, she directly go to the cleaning of the latrine, the compound, in the house, in the materials. After that, she go with her husband to the field for plowing, for weeding, and whatever activities there, she will be with her husband to do the farming activities. After that, she return back to home and preparing coffee.
Even after these morning activities, the day is still young for Mebret.
She is responsible for also the chicken, for the cattle, and for the cow. She is the one who cleaning their compound, and she is the one who feed the chicken and even who bake the traditional bread, injera, and she prepare the sauce, and she provide lunch to her children and her husband. And above all, she has like a social role. She is the head of the Women Development Army, so whenever she get a chance, she go to the people and she teach that if there is a pregnant mother, if there is a sick mother, she consults them and she advise them to go to the health posts. And she is also the one who construct these traditional stoves and like a place to sit down. Yeah, a cooking stove. And this all is like she bring the mud to plastering the house if there is any crack. So she is the one who plastering the wall and who is doing this cooking stove. Yeah, this all is her responsibility.
She wants to make sure the other mothers understand the importance of keeping the family's hands and faces clean, as well as the home environment.
She said that I will focus on the cleaning of the compound and face washing. I will tell them that you have to wash your faces because trachoma come through flies, and if there is a dirty faces, it will be a good place for trachoma transmission. So I just tell them to wash their faces and to construct latrine and to use latrine. This is like the key message for the discussion.
It is a big responsibility to head the Women's Development Army for her community, but Mebret takes her job seriously because she knows that she is looked upon as an example.
She's saying that I am the leader of the 16 householders, and I'm one of the examples for the other group members. When we have a meetings, I advise them to go to the health post. If there's a pregnant woman and if there is a sick mother, I advise them to go to the health post. And I am a model because I construct a latrine and my compound is clean. So I just share my experience to the group members and invite them to see what I'm doing and to learn by seeing what I'm doing.
Light for the World partners with other international organizations working in Ethiopia and other developing countries where trachoma is the primary cause of blindness. They say by acting now, they can eradicate blinding trachoma worldwide by 2020.
Malawians in the country's commercial capital, Blantyre, usually rely on tap water. But for the past 5 months, the taps have often run dry, forcing residents to draw water from unprotected sources like rivers and wells while work is being done at the city's main pumping station. Lamek Masina files from Blantyre, where the risk of contracting waterborne diseases is rising.
Here in Blantyre and surrounding areas, residents have spent 5 days without tap water. Women who by Malawi tradition are responsible for household tasks complain of risks they face when fetching water from rivers far from residential areas. Rhoda Milanzi is a housewife and a mother of three. She tells VOA the journeys through bushy footpaths are risky.
You see, we have to wake up every day, 2 a.m., sometimes 1 a.m., to go and collect water. There are so many risks. Sometimes we would meet witches on the way, snakes on the way, even hyenas, they have been chasing us.
Milanzi says to ease the burden of carrying water home for bathing, women prefer to bathe in the river. But she says they have been disturbed by youth who hide in the nearby bush.
You know, these youths of today would come there and sneak to see us naked. This has been distracting us. In fact, we went to the chiefs, we complained about it. They did something, but you know, they would sometimes climb trees just to look at other women like us taking a bath.
The water problem has also affected the delivery of health services. 3 weeks ago, authorities at Queen Elizabeth Central Hospital in Blantyre confirmed that they had suspended surgical operations due to water scarcity. Health rights campaigners warn of the possible outbreak of waterborne diseases, especially in densely populated areas, if the situation is left unresolved. Officials at the Blantyre Water Board attribute the problem largely to an ongoing European Union-funded project that seeks to install new pumping machines at Wagas Ferry, the main pumping station. Priscilla Mateu is the spokesperson for the Blantyre Water Board. She says the project is expected to increase water production capacity to 105,000 cubic meters per day from the current daily production of 78,000 cubic meters.
January, that's when the projects are finishing, but for the new machines and everything else to start working proper, we have to wait up until March. And that's when we expect that the levels should be increased and we're also improving the production capacity again, at least be what we expect it to be.
The local consumer rights watchdog, the Consumers Association of Malawi, has been planning to hold vigils at the water board until the water supply was normalized, but the board asked protesters to hold off, promising to distribute water to the residents through mobile water tanks. The consumer rights group has given Water Board 2 weeks to fulfill its commitment before proceeding with the protests. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to Africa News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday through Friday. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Up next, our VOA editorial. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our African News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Rashad Smith, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
When activists at the joint mobile group Human Rights Group in Chechnya's capital of Grozny saw a number of men attempting to break into their offices on December 13th, they evacuated the premises. Soon after, the offices were on fire. Later, it was discovered that all equipment had been smashed. On the following day, Chechen police entered a joint mobile group-owned apartment without a warrant, ransacked the premises, and confiscated electronic equipment. They body-searched two lawyers who were on the premises at the time and detained them without charges for several hours. Joint Mobile Group is part of a program developed by the Russian non-governmental organization Committee Against Torture. Its purpose is to investigate human rights abuses under Russian-backed Chechen leader Ramzan Kadyrov. Some 50 lawyers rotate in short shifts throughout this region of Russia, where too many human rights activists and journalists investigating human rights abuses have disappeared or been killed. Both Committee Against Torture and Joint Mobile Group are headed by human rights activists and member of the Kremlin's Human Rights Council, Igor Kalyapin. This most recent attack against human rights advocates has its beginnings in a December 4th attack by insurgents against law enforcement officials in Grozny. 14 law enforcement officers and all insurgents were killed that day. In response, Ramzan Kadyrov announced that the families of the militants would be exiled and their homes destroyed. After several houses and surrounding villages burned down, Igor Kalyapin appealed to Russia's prosecutor general to investigate whether Kadyrov's orders for collective punishment of the insurgents' families might constitute a criminal offense under Article 286 of the Russian Criminal Code. Since then, Mr. Kalyapin has suffered severe harassment. He was pelted with eggs and verbally abused during a press conference and received numerous threatening phone calls and text messages. The United States is extremely concerned by reports of arson at the Grozny offices of the Joint Mobile Group and the threats directed against human rights defenders, including Igor Kalyapin, said State Department spokesperson Jen Psaki. We urge the authorities to investigate this incident and the threats against these individuals and ensure the safety of all human rights defenders in Chechnya and across Russia.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at voanews.com/editorials.
Hello, I'm Lino Mudu. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.